Perfect.
Yeah.
So would you say that we had a flawless victory here?
Yes. Oh, I see what you did there. Hello and welcome to the Indie Dev Podcast. I'm your host, David Voiles. This week is a bit different. I've got my coworker in Washington, D.C., Shahid Chowdhury, on the show, along with two other, I don't want to say developers, but we'll say people who have absolutely worked in the games industry. Peck Pongpat, along with Daniel Pacina. Shahid and Dan grew up together, or Shahid and Peck grew up together, and Peck met Daniel while studying at his Wushu studio. Daniel played Johnny Cage, as well as several other ninjas, including Sub-Zero, Scorpio, Reptile, Smoke, and Noob Saibot in several Mortal Kombat games. And Peck has also worked in six Mortal Kombat games spanning 10 years. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on this week.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So we have got quite a bit to cover. I don't know if you want to start from left to right. So as it appears on Skype, Peck, why don't you start, you know, 1 minute into your story, how you got started, and then move on to Dan and Shahid, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. I grew up watching, you know, Jackie Chan, Jet Li movies, Hong Kong action movies. So I've always wanted to study martial arts, but my parents never, you know, being, while I was young, they really did not encourage that. So when I got my first job, graduated from college and got my first job, the first thing I did was look for a kung fu school. And lo and behold, very close to where I lived, Daniel Pacina had his wushu school very close by. Yeah. So I joined, and that the rest is history. I got to study wushu under Daniel for over 10 years, and then that led to opportunities in the Mortal Kombat video games. So then, which was the motion capture. I did motion capture for Mortal Kombat 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then Shaolin Monks. That's six games spanning 10 years.
Holy cow. Wow, so you got some experience going over all this. And we'll get into very shortly what you're doing now as well, because it is very different from how you started with Mortal Kombat, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But Daniel, why don't you introduce us to who you are and what your background is as well.
I played Dungeons and Dragons with the creator of Mortal Kombat, John Tobias. He called me up and he's like, "Hey, will you help me pitch a game to my boss?" Mm-hmm. And so he had this idea where he wanted to film a bunch of action and some characters and film it, and then he was going to take it to his boss. Mm-hmm. Later on, I would find out that his boss was Ed Boon, and Ed Boon would take it. To the upper management, you know, to see if they wanted to go ahead with this game. And the whole premise was this game, fighting game, first fighting game we ever did with live characters, recognizable characters, I guess. And also, we were going to only make 200, like, video cabinets, like, for the old arcade.
So much for that, huh?
Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, around 1992, like, right?
So I grew up halfway around the world in Bangladesh, and growing up in school, I had never seen anything like Mortal Kombat. Like, we'd played Street Fighter in the arcades. Yeah. So you can imagine the kind of influence that your team has had, and you yourself. Just, you know, seeing Mortal Kombat for the first time, playing in arcades, playing in the home console, it just blew our minds. And at that point, we heard a lot about, in the Western world, how kids were not allowed to play it because it was too ultra-violent, realistic.
Right.
Back in the East, no one said anything like that. We just played whatever we wanted. So we had a great time.
Yeah.
Awesome. Holy cow. And I'm kind of in awe of who we're even talking to today. This is awesome. One of my goals when I started this podcast several years ago was to try to talk about the history of games and how people got involved and what it was like to create a lot of these things, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. So the fact that I can have both of you on and get a lot of the behind the scenes here is incredible. So, Shahid, real quick, why don't you give us a story of who you are, how you're tied into all this as well?
Sure. So I lived in a bunch of countries growing up. Again, you know, we already covered that. I met Peck when I was younger. This was back in Bangkok. But I mostly grew up in Bangladesh, where I was first introduced to Mortal Kombat. And then after coming to the U.S., I worked in the software industry for many years, but also have taken martial arts and played video games. And I have just loved video games that involve martial arts in them. So I've been a big fan. And then now that I work for Microsoft, Dave, as you know, you and I work on the same team in different parts of the country. You in Philly and me in D.C. So it's always a great opportunity to not only talk to people who are working on in the video games industry as developers, but also in other aspects of video games.
Awesome. Yeah, so we all have like very different backgrounds. Interesting to see how everyone kind of got tied in together over here. So, Peck, going back to you, you studied Wushu. Were there other types of martial arts that you got into? And then from studying this, how did you get into motion capture and games as well?
Sure. I'm actually curious. I had no martial arts background prior to studying Wushu, and I didn't study anything else. I really enjoyed Wushu, so I would say I got deep, rather than exploring other arts, I got deep into Wushu. I studied lots of weapons under Daniel. You know, this culminated into me learning broadsword. My specialties were broadsword and staff, but I did learn straight sword, three-section staff, chain whip, double-handed broadsword, double-handed straight sword, double broadswords, rope dart, anything you name it. You know, Daniel taught, and I soaked it all up. You know, I did regional competitions in the Midwest. That's where we were. That culminated in the mid-2000. Daniel took us to. We were invited to a tournament in China. Yeah. This was Wubin. It was Jet Li's coach. Wubin's international tournament. I competed in there and won silver and bronze in my two events, which was pretty good. But at some point, you know, I got pretty good at what I did. That and then that kind of coincided around the time that Mortal Kombat, the video game, was looking into motion capture. Because like the first few weren't motion capture, they were green screened.
Right. So it was actually they were grabbing the live image of people on screen. Yeah.
Right, right. As opposed to motion capture.
Explain what this is.
Yeah, so motion capture is when you wear a really dark suit with these sensors, these dots that get picked up by infrared cameras.
Yep.
These reflective dots. And what they do is the cameras around them digitize those motions of the dots, and you can map those dots' movements to 3D characters. So they were just getting into that with Mortal Kombat 5. That was a new game, and then by that time, they were looking for motion capture talent. And Daniel heard about the opportunity, and he said, "Peck, you should go try out for, you know, I hear they're looking for this. So you should go try out for this." So Daniel's brother, Carlos Messina, to this day, still works at Mortal Kombat. The Realms, Warner Brothers Studios. So he was the original Raiden in the Mortal Kombat video game. So Raiden and Sub-Zero are brothers, essentially.
Wow. And I bet most people had no idea that any of this was actually happening either.
Yeah. So I was told about the opportunity, so I went into the NetherRealm Studios, Midway Games at the time.
Yes.
And I auditioned.
This is in Chicago?
This is in Chicago. So I auditioned just like everybody else. You know, I performed some stuff in front of Ed Boon and his team. And this was very early 2000, and they liked what they saw. So I was invited to be part of the Mortal Kombat Deadly Alliance, which was Mortal Kombat 5 at the time. And then after that, you know, they called me in every year after that until, you know, whenever they needed me.
Yep. Awesome.
That's the gist.
So Daniel, is that far different from what you were doing maybe 10 or 15 years prior? Or actually, I guess 10 years. So 92, they're probably shooting Mortal Kombat 1, correct?
Actually, November 18th, 1989 is the first first day I showed up to shoot officially Mortal Kombat. As I said, we started with the pitch. So we filmed some of us, our action, and we pitched it to the game. And then Ed took it to the owners, and the owners decided to put like Van Damme into the game. Yeah. So that actually collapsed. That collapsed, and then we can't. They canceled the game. But then John, like back then, he's like, you know, my friends came out to film. You know, I have all these characters that I've worked on. I already worked on the story characters. Please let me do the original project, the 200 games. Let's do 200 games. And so Ed was like, okay, well, try some of it and let's see how it goes. So
right.
November 18th, 1989, I showed up and...
You have an incredible memory.
Naturally, it's like history.
Yeah.
not memory for everything, but I only remember selective. Because it's 3 days after my brother's birthday.
I was going to say it's 1 month before my birthday, so I would have been about three.
Yeah, so we went in and the place where we shot was actually not a place where you shoot stuff. It was a storage room. So about the first 2 hours, we cleaned out all the empty desks and empty things that they had from the office in there. Mm-hmm. And then John went around and actually got lights from desks because we didn't have any lighting in there besides the fluorescent bulbs up ahead.
Yep.
So it was a little bit, it was very barbaric. There was at the beginning, there was the creative process was four strokes. First stroke, do something. Second idea, oh, I like that. Let's do it like this.
Right.
Third way, hey, Daniel, can you think of something cool to do for this? And fourth way, we happened to be goofing around because it was just John and I, or John and like my brother, or John and Richard DeVizio, filming at the time. So we would always be goofing around. So he would be like, oh, that's cool. Let's put that in the game. And so that's how basically it started.
So just kind of like riffing this, making it happen, going along, seeing what worked.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. And to think how different the budgets are today, like Peck, you know, with your work, and especially as of late, is it more, we'll say, managed because of the time and the costs associated with it and things like that?
Yeah, by the time I got into it, budgets definitely felt like they were getting bigger and bigger all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you look at games today, like Halo, like the AAA titles, they're like movie budget, right?
Right.
But when we started, Mortal Kombat 5, I would say, was still pretty small. The mocap, the core mocap team was literally maybe like three people. It was like Kevin, Carlos, and I did most of the work, I would say.
Oh, so wow.
Like three people did the mocap for Mortal Kombat 5. And then as we did more games, like the budget got bigger and more people got involved. By the time let's say Mortal Kombat 10 came along, you know, maybe there were like at least 12 people involved in mocap, you know.
Okay.
So as the game, the series grew, like budgets got bigger and they were able to do more and get more people involved, which was good because, you know, like I think you have more variety. Like I could always tell when I did the mocap, you know, like if you played a character, I could tell you that, oh, that kind of moves like me. And people who like go to our school and, you know, our friends who studied the martial arts with us, they could pick that, oh, this guy looked, you know, this character moved like me. So the more people involved, I think, the more unique the styles and the movement.
So, so we talked about the different budgets, you know, how you started small, but now budgets are getting bigger. But lately, there's been a resurgence of a lot of independent developers and small teams working on different games. Is this kind of motion capture within their reach, or is it only in the hands of big name developers these days? Can small groups build games the way you did back in the day?
Well, I think there is a lot of indie games. Like, so just a little bit background. I have an indie games company myself now. Mm-hmm. We just started in October last year. It's called Appy Owl. So you can find some of our games in the iTunes and the Google Play Store. You know, we don't do 3D just yet. But, you know, lots of indie game companies are starting to have done 3D in Unity. I don't know if motion capture is practical yet in terms of for a small indie studio, like a really small developer studio. But hand animate, there's tools now that will hand animate stuff that you can get pretty nice stuff. People, you know, if you're a digital artist or a 3D modeler and, you know, motion guy, you could probably hand animate some of with these modern tools. Okay. And also, there's a lot more libraries out there, you know, like motion capture libraries that people sell.
Right.
You know, there's these marketplaces that sell motion, pre-canned motion, and, you know, attacks and movements, running, like any kind of animation you think you can think of. I'm mm-hmm. sure you can find a market, you know, within the marketplace of motion capture stuff that you can buy that. So I would say yes, it is within the grasp of game developers these days.
And, well, bringing it all together, I mean, you just mentioned Unity. So Unity has a great asset store where people can sell different components, graphics, game templates, and so on. But yeah, if you guys were to maybe capture your own motion and freelance yourself into right. the Unity asset store, imagine, you know, you could just literally make money in your sleep while people are downloading your motion capture, putting it into other video games.
That's exactly right. what I was thinking.
That's a really good idea. But to let you know how far it came, when we shot Mortal Kombat, sometimes John would say, hey, I have to check with my dad to see if I could use his camera. So yeah, I was like, okay, when are we going to film? Well, I got to check. I got to make sure we get studio time, but I got to ask my dad if I could use the camera. So it was it has come a long way.
Yeah, and absolutely, because I mean, now it's like multi-million-dollar budgets, and back then, you know, you were perhaps not the first, but definitely one of the first to use live motion capture for games. There's a word I'm looking for. I can't think of the top of my head. We're actually catching like the full motion video along with the capture, so somewhat of rotoscoping. But I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on what you're doing. Digitize, yes, digitize sprites is exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that is not how we originally were going to have it. We were going to have like the video footage as close to as we can, but it was okay. taking up too much memory. And then one of the programmers from Midway, I forget his name now,
yep.
stayed up for like 3 days, and he was like, he made a computer, because at that time there was no program that could yes. digitize yes. stuff. So he made a computer and then made the program also and put that together to actually digitize us. And he said he stayed up, I think, for 3 days. He's like, I was on caffeine for like 2 whole days.
Just like get this thing out the door.
Right.
Yeah, because shortly after this, like I collect all these old full motion video games. I don't know why. But shortly after this, probably 2 years later, there was a studio called Digital Pictures who created games on 32X, Sega CD, 3DO, and they actually had a game called Supreme Warrior. And Supreme Warrior is from the first person perspective, so the camera is essentially attached to your head, and you're fighting all these martial artists throughout Hong Kong is where they shot it in 94. So it's awesome to see how they kind of took this idea that you were building on initially, and they kind of went through with the whole thing. It's not put together very well. It's very professionally shot. Gameplay is somewhat lacking, but it's called Supreme Warrior. Very interesting to watch in real time. Basically, how are you going to make a movie into a fighting game?
Yeah, that could be a little different.
Yeah, yeah. So are both of you still practicing martial arts at this point?
Beg your pardon?
Daniel still has a school. He's still practicing.
So you're both still actively practicing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still practice and teach 5 days a week. Actually, we're doing this interview today. Tomorrow I go to Massachusetts and teach some seminars out in Massachusetts.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I actually saw an image of that on your Twitter feed just before this. Like a shot of Scorpion. Yeah, Scorpion and you. Also, what I want to ask was, like, there's a picture of you dressed as Johnny Cage here, and I'm noticing you're kind of doing this little flying move where you're sitting on, like, wooden steps. So is that often how they would capture motion or digitized animation back then? Like, they'd kind of held you up some way?
What happened was the original process was we would... because the camera was only like a regular 8, it wasn't a high 8 regular 8, and John was really afraid that the footage would come out blurry, so mm-hmm. all the movements had to be done really slow, so all the kicks and punches are actually done very, very slow, so you'd have to actually hold your foot up in the air for a little bit of time.
Okay, so make sure you caught the frame and caught it clearly.
Yeah. So we were getting to the jump kicks, and I'm doing the jump kick, and it's a concrete floor, and I'm wearing these like thin slippers, and you know I'm on the 20th kick, and again they're not really paying me much, and doing this as a favor, and I just looked at, I'm doing this over and over, and I'm getting this look on my face, and then John looks at me and goes, "Dude, can you jump slower?" And I looked at him, and I was like kind of mad, but then I saw across the way that there was some stairs from a different video game. And I was like, hey, I don't know if you can do this, but can I sit on the stairs and act like you could like film me jumping and then cut on the stairs like I'm throwing a kick? Right. And John was like, oh, we could do that. And so that's how that process of using the stairs, because otherwise I would have to jump in slow motion, which was like kind of physically impossible.
Right. I can only do so much with gravity, right?
Yeah. And two, you couldn't jump higher because then your head would be out of the frame.
Yeah.
Or you, and two, if you jumped a little bit away, your body would shrink because it's only two dimensional. So we experimented a lot with film then. The first 16 or 20 hours of the original footage was erased to save money. We would film over whatever we filmed last time. New stuff, and then be like, well, we got a low budget. Let's just film over it. Okay.
And that's the kind of stuff that people would love to see today, right? It's kind of like lost in the making of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine if you could retrieve that somehow. You just found maybe an unused tape just lying around.
I have about 5 original footage.
But that's awesome.
But the first one to actually to go and to do Mortal Kombat is Johnny Cage. He's like the father of all the characters. So originally, I would say I did about maybe 18 hours worth of footage that is gone now, that we did to kind of cycle through moves, see what would work, see kind of like, oh, let's do this. Oh, we can't use that because we forgot to mark where we were the last time. So now
let's
that
do it again.
You're taller than before, so now we got to do it again.
Oh my goodness. Well, would you ever have the ability to like share any of this footage with the public or? Because I know sometimes studios are kind of concerned they do or don't allow.
No. They have some control issues.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the way, like, the not media, but studios work that way. I understand. So what was interesting.
We can talk about it.
I just came back from the Museum of Still Image in New York. It's in Astoria, Queens. And they have an exhibit going on right now. It's about classic arcade games. So this museum, if you're not aware, it's about $15 to get in. It's fantastic. And what they do is they take really in-depth looks at film. So 2001 Space Odyssey, they grab the actual notebooks of the directors and the producers and all of their telegrams going back and forth between London and LA. So it's amazing to see how deep they get. One of the games they were highlighting was Mortal Kombat as part of this historic museum. So would either of you had ever have guessed that this franchise would get, you know, this big at this point where people around the world are aware of it and it's in, you know, museums held up as, you know, classics?
Yeah, as far as I would never thought of it, but in September, I go to South America to do like 3 gaming events. That's how big it is. Like, it's like, holy cow. Yeah, you're invited to come to South America to do a gaming event, a cosplay event, and a comic event.
Wow! Well, yeah, so you're both
I gotta ask: if you're doing cosplay, who are you gonna dress as?
Very good question.
I actually my favorite character is Raiden.
All right.
So dress as Raiden, because otherwise, if I dress like Scorpion or Sub Zero or Johnny Cage, it's actually me. Because I when we were filming, they had no like personality or anything like that. We were allowed to do our own whatever personality in during the filming, and then they would take that and they would add it into like a story.
Right.
So the basic story was there, but not really how the characters mingled or what their really how the relationship was. Wasn't until we started filming.
The question for Peck then, who are you going to dress as if Daniel takes Raiden?
Raiden?
Yeah.
I'm a Sub-Zero. I think my second choice would be Sub-Zero. Sub-Zero is cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Reptile all the way.
Yeah.
So you're both... Well, keep going, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, by the time I joined Mortal Kombat, it was already a big franchise, mm-hmm. you know, and Daniel and everybody else were pretty well known in the industry. And I would say, you know, the much of the recognition when I say I was involved in the Mortal Kombat series is, you know, they harken back to Mortal Kombat 1 and 2, right? Like, those mm-hmm. were the favorites and the classics. So that's kind of where what I came to is from, you know, from that legacy.
It's about the halfway point of where we are now. So you're both obviously still active in what you're doing with martial arts. What are you doing now, both professionally and personally, that you'd like to share? So what keeps you busy at night?
Peck never sleeps.
I guess not.
I have a software services company. I've been involved in tech. My degree is in engineering, and I've been involved in tech for almost 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So I have a software development company, and we do software services. So that's not very interesting.
Impeccable.
But impeccable, yes, that's right. You know, we're almost 30 people now. We have like 10 Fortune 500 clients like Google, Motorola, HP, Kohl's, stuff like that. But mm-hmm. more recently, I started another company as well, and this is very interesting to your audience because it's an indie game company. It's called Happy Owl, and we make casual mobile games. I've always been interested in games, and you know, this was something that I think, you know, I had found, you know, the right team of graphic artists and game designers. The technology. So we use a platform similar to Unity. We use Unity as well, but we also use something called BuildBox, which is a 2D game platform. So we make games at a pace of a game a week. We don't launch them at a week, but we make a game a week. You know, mostly cutesy characters, kind of like Angry Birds or Flappy Bird style characters, very casual games. That's what we're doing.
In the background right now, I have Galaxy Boost playing, so people get an idea of what's going on.
Awesome, yeah, and we just released Cube Man and Bouncy Cloud. Cube Man, it's kind of a 3D isometric, you know, very simple. Our game, the goal is to make them very approachable. You know, most of our games you can play with a thumb, you know. And then we're also thinking of bigger games, kind of like Badlands or Leo's Fortune. So that's coming, sort of a bigger game. Obviously, that, you know, can't take less than a week. So that one we're investing a bit more time and energy in, but that's coming too. So it's sort of a bigger platform game, and I'm very excited too.
So you're trying to see what works, what doesn't work, get things out the door, and just keep iterating on what you're building quickly.
Correct. Yes. It's the fail fast, experiment fast, and learn fast.
Okay. And Daniel, same for you?
That is Peck's life. Fast. I teach martial arts. Again, I was contacted more because of my martial art ability for the game, and John wanted to make it authentic. So, you know, a lot of people ask, where have I been for the last, you know, Mortal Kombat's like 25 years old.
Yeah.
Where have I been for the last 25 years? And I tell them I've been becoming a master of martial arts, like an old school master. Of martial arts. So, you know, doing martial arts, you know, doing some conventions actually if I get invited or things like that. Mm-hmm. As far as projects, any little project comes my way, I'll think about it. Maybe working on a new game, a different game, but you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Just enjoying life, man.
Yeah. And what got either of you interested in martial arts in the first place? And also, is there something greater that you think others can take away? I mean, other than just like the fitness, but, you know, as a developer, what else can I take away from martial arts? Am I learning, you know, like productivity or focus? Like, what are the benefits you think are available from it?
If you ever watch the movie Shaolin Soccer, you will realize.
I have seen parts of that.
Yeah, traditional martial art is good for anything. Good for whether you're a developer or golfer or anything like that. It really is. But it is now in our day and age, it's truly hard to find a master of martial arts. Right now, I'm going to be babbling. But right now, they say you're a martial art master if you know all the techniques in a system. while old school martial art master is like my master looked at me and says, wow, you're connected. I mean, I have like a body, mind-body connection. And you can tell just from looking at me that I had that. Like this, it's more like looking at somebody and understanding like, wow, your structure is perfect. Every time you move an eighth of an inch, your structure is perfect. So that's what kind of like I've been doing. So it could be more like a moving yoga, I guess.
It's like very well coordinated the entire time.
Yeah, you can learn because you know how the human body can do anything, and the human mind can accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm. And this has helped you focus along the way.
Yes.
And same for you, Peck. Like, what sparked your interest?
Well, what sparked my interest was, you know, growing up watching kung fu movies, you know, like Jackie Chan and like, and then a lot of the wuxia, like kung fu series novels and stuff like that growing up. So I grew up watching all of those, mostly translated in Thai. And then, you know, later on the Jet Li movies. So my appeal, you know, with many martial arts, there's really two tracks. There's like the forms aspect and then the sparring aspect. I really didn't enjoy sparring. I didn't like hitting people, and more so I didn't like getting hit as well. but I really enjoy the performance aspect, the discipline aspect. I think what the takeaway from martial arts and working with Daniel and studying under him is the discipline, the respect you learn, the hard work. There's a Chinese saying is you have to taste the bitter before you taste the sweet. So nothing worth earning comes easy, and you have to go through the bitterness of the hard work before you earn. Everybody wants the easy road. They want to success they expect success to come easy.
I think they thought, you know, I've spent some time, I'm going to get success.
No pain, no gain.
No pain, no gain. Exactly. And what that has taught me is when people ask how I've gotten this far, you know, my company, we have almost 30 people now, started from nothing, self-funded and all that. And we have some great clients. Like, people wonder, like, well, it's just a lot of it is not sexy, not glamorous. It's just grinding hard work. That's what wushu is. This is what martial arts is. It's training for 2 minutes of competition, right?
Right.
So, but that's, if you, all you focus on is the competition, and that's all you see is like, wow, he's so good in 2 minutes. But, you know, it took years to get that 2 minutes to be really good.
Right. Well, you know, you're natural. You're born with it.
Maybe it's Maybelline, but maybe it's, you know, just hard work.
And, you know, at first I was initially confused to what wushu was, but I threw in wushu demonstration in YouTube, and one of the first videos that appears is these two women. One's in a white, I guess you'd call it a gi, I'm not quite sure. And then someone else is in a purple outfit, and they have a spear, and they're like battling back and forth. And I saw this on Facebook some time ago and was absolutely blown away at not only how athletic the two of them were, but also the amount of trust, because they're both thrusting a spear in each other's face. But it's like a very well-coordinated dance, right? Where it appears one person seems to know if the spear is going to go here, I've got to turn my head the other way. So it's amazing to see two people move not only so athletically and quick, but also have that much trust in another person too.
Yeah, that's just years of repetition and choreography. That's what's called a set form. So it's performed with one or two or more people, and you know that's a choreographed performance. And to play with live weapons like that, it's just repeat over and over and over.
Holy cow. Yeah, this is pretty incredible. So I don't want to keep you guys too long. So Shahed, do you have any questions before we start to wrap things up over here?
No, I just want to add a quick comment. So I'm nowhere near a martial arts master as any of these guys. It's definitely not Daniel. But having taken some martial arts classes myself, I got to say the things that you learned just stays with you over the years. Like even today, even if I'm still going to the gym, like the stretches that I learned before fighting or sparring in class, I still do it to this day. So there's so many things you can learn in class. And you're able to do other things. I remember one of my friends who was with me in class, Bob, he is now the captain of the USTA Tennis Championship or Association. So again, you know, starting with one thing can lead you to another. So just as Peck was able to use that discipline to do something else, and you know, Daniel is still running his own business. My friends, like now playing tennis, as a captain. Again, lots of different things you can learn out of it. So I definitely agree with everything you guys said.
Awesome. So before we wrap up over here, I do the same thing every episode. I have the previous guest ask a question for the next guest who comes in the show. So before we go any further, I would like to get you two on the hook, Peck and Daniel, for last week's question. Now, this was from the developers at who created Sashimi, Neon Deity Games. And the question was, and this is very relevant to what our discussion is, if you could bring back any classic video game system, which would it be and why? So essentially make an old system popular again. So this could be something you grew up with or just have a fancy for.
Daniel, you got...
Well, I'm just going to have to do the standard Nintendo. I've always loved Nintendo.
Okay.
And it's and I think it's adaptable. At the beginning, I was going to say Commodore, but I think that's too limited. It wasn't really as powerful, I think Nintendo is where we peaked out. And sure, you could have better graphics, but, you know, the games back then were awesome.
Gameplay is king.
Yeah. Yes.
And Peck, how about for you?
I would have to say I really love the Dreamcast, and I'm sorry to
say
that, you know, Sega is no longer making consoles, but, you know, like Soul Calibur has aged very well, in my opinion.
I agree.
I just played it the other day. You know, Kilik, the guy who plays the staff, which is my weapon,
yep.
One of his, you know, the beginning things, they all do forms. That's the that's a compulsory form that everybody who learns Wushu staff needs to learn. It's very authentic. And,
awesome.
And that's why it needs to be, preserved.
All right, I got to commend you for two things there. First of all, I still have my Dreamcast from September 9th, 1999 in its original box and the original Soul Calibur. It doesn't run as well sometimes with the disc has issues, but when I was doing my martial arts, I used a 6-foot staff and I learned those Killik moves, so I can still do those in real life. So I got to say, Killik has been my favorite character from Soul Calibur. And I've seen that a lot of the Dreamcast games are available. Even the Sega Genesis games have been available on Xbox 360, now available on the Xbox One through backwards compatibility. So just the other day, I was playing the Dreamcast version of Soul Calibur that was ported to Xbox 360, now running on Xbox One. And that Xbox controller, which I have it right here. Let me grab it.
I hear you. Well, he's not kidding. He's got it
there
right
you
here.
Go. So Xbox One controller, I felt, was the closest thing to being a spiritual successor for Dreamcast. And you know, all the buttons and sticks are very easy to play all those Dreamcast games. So yeah, even to this day, if I had to pick one, that's what I would pick.
All right. I was actually in New York last weekend doing work. And as I'm walking through Times Square, I see a woman with a Dreamcast launch shirt. Dreamcast, and the date came out 9/9/99. Thought, oh my God, that thing's hung out for 18 years and it's still going well. All right.
I still have mine too.
Okay, so come full circle. Gentlemen, is there anything that you'd like the viewers to know? Like, where can they find you? Best way to reach out, whether it's Twitter or website, what would you like to point them towards? And then finally, any final notes before we get out of here?
Heck?
For me, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm pretty much on every social.
Uh-oh, may have lost him.
I think we lost him there.
I think we lost Peck.
So,
okay.
Fatality.
Who's responsible?
Hey guys, are you
for
still
this?
There? Sorry.
Oh, there you are. We thought we lost you.
Yeah. So, my thing is, I'm on a lot of the social networks. So, PeckPongPat on Twitter.
Okay.
Just Peck on Instagram, PEK.
Yep.
And then just Peck at Impeccable on my email if you want to talk business. And then Peck at Appial if you have questions about the games or feedback. I'd love to have your feedback.
And do you want to spell impeccable for those people?
Yeah, it's the correct spelling of impeccable. That's I-M-P-E-K-A-B-L-E.
Naturally.
All right.
Naturally.
Yeah. All right. So, like your name.
On words. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Daniel, for you.
Yeah, as far as me, I didn't have enough foresight to see that I'd reach over 5,000 people on my Facebook page, but you could reach me on, like, Facebook, Master Daniel Pacina. On Facebook, I am Master Pacina on Twitter and Master D Pacina on Instagram. And if you need to talk business, you can also contact me at masterpiscina@gmail.com.
Perfect. And Shahed, anything for you?
No, I'm a little starstruck right now. Never thought a little kid from Bangladesh could be sitting here talking to Master Piscina.
Yeah, absolutely. You and I both. And I've got to say, I was in kindergarten when Mortal Kombat came out, and my uncle, I had a Genesis. My uncle bought it the day it came out, brought it to my house, forgot that he left it there. So I got Mortal Kombat on launch day in kindergarten, and that was the first code I ever learned. The blood code was ABACABB. And why it sticks with me 24 years later, I have no idea. So it is very nice to have all of you guys on the show. Thank you very much. And again, if there's anything else you'd like to discuss in the show or come on another point, I would love to have you on. Thank you again, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Dave. Thanks, Ed, for arranging this.
Guys, bye. Yeah.